Our industry is grappling with uncertainty. At the 2025 National Restaurant Association show, you'll explore innovative solutions, strategies, and partnerships that will prepare you for whatever comes your way. Take it from me. The show has everything you need to elevate your front and back of house. You'll see, touch, taste, and demo the latest trending products across more than 900 categories, including food, beverage, technology, equipment, and more. Don't miss the industry's most trusted event taking place in Chicago, May 17th to 20th. Secure your badge by May 9th to save $30. Register today at nationalrestaurantshow.com. Rate quoted ends on May 9th and applies to operators only. Non-exhibiting suppliers are subject to a higher badge rate. Please check out the show's website.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to another episode of Extra Serving, a podcast from Nation's Restaurant News. I am Editor-in-Chief Sam Okus, and joined by my colleague, Executive Editor Alicia Kelso. Alicia, welcome.
Hi.
Happy Friday. You got a big weekend ahead of you. Have you been eating lots of carbs today, Alicia?
I have a spaghetti dinner planned for tonight and my allotted two beers.
Two beers, allotted by your wife or allotted by the race?
By myself.
By yourself. That's very good discipline. Yes. And you are running a half marathon tomorrow.
Yep.
So by the time people are listening to this, you will have been done and exhausted.
Hopefully. And
alive, hopefully.
Yeah.
So That's more than I could do.
I run it every year, 20 years. It kicks off Derby Week. It's a big, you know, big time in Louisville, Kentucky. Next week when we have this conversation, it will be Derby proper. I will be drinking a heck of a lot more than two beers. I can promise you that. So, and then it turns into bourbon season.
Are you a mint julep drinker?
I was not until about three. I think once I got older, I became a little bit more acquired to the taste. And now I never used to drink bourbon, and now I probably drink too much.
I mean, if it wasn't so doggone good, you know, I think it's bourbon's fault for being tasty.
That's
and
true.
Where you live and you have such great access to it. I will tell you, Alicia, I broke into the Mark Wahlberg tequila, which you and I were both, you brought a bottle home, right?
I sure did.
We were very fortunate that we both got Mark Wahlberg, keynoter at RLC, for those who were living under the rock for the last week and don't participate in LinkedIn. And got to bring home a bottle of his Flecha tequila. I grabbed is it Rostado? It's not the Blanco. I think it's called Rostado. I enjoyed it. It was a good sipping tequila, which tequila has never been sipping for me. It is always, how fast does it go down the throat? Which I don't enjoy, by the way. Usually that's forced upon me. Sounds weird, but take it as it is. But this was sipping tequila, which I thought mostly because I said to myself, you know what? This could replace bourbon theoretically in some instances because it had that kind of just smooth, nice, kind of tasty tequila, not the kind you feel like you need to drink quickly.
I had an extensive conversation with several executives who I won't name at ICR about how they have recently switched over to tequila to switch.
Interesting.
Yeah, because it's less caloric, the brown liquor, and they felt better. So yeah, you're on the right path, I think.
I'm sure there is some science to that. I will say, though, and before we jump into headlines, because we got a lot to talk about, as far as tequila goes, the only reason I opened it was because a close friend had come over to hang out and chat. And I'm like, this is a great opportunity to open something special. I do not, in general, drink liquor by myself. Now, I'm with you that bourbon, if I ever do, it is bourbon. But liquor just feels like one of those things where it's like, I need to sip on this with a friend over a conversation. This is not something where I'm casually drinking liquor. So anyway, all to say that bottle of Flecha tequila might sit in my pantry for a long, long time. We'll see. Anyway, let's jump into the headlines, Alicia, because we get back from RLC, we're exhausted, and boom, we get thrown into the deep end with what's going on this week. This week, we are going to talk about Chipotle, Jack in the Box, Jersey Mike's, Red Robin, McDonald's. Holy smokes, it's all the big guys. Let's start with Chipotle. Chipotle shocked the industry, I think shocked us anyway, by reporting that sales and traffic were down in the last quarter. This is about as big a warning sign as I think you could possibly get for the economy, wouldn't you say, Alicia?
I do. I don't think that the negative sales and traffic was a huge surprise. We talked prior on this podcast that Q1 was going to be a bit of a bloodbath because we had those issues with weather. You know, on the last earnings call, Texas Roadhouse came out and said, whoa, we're experiencing some issues because of weather. And, you know, There was widespread illness around the weird things were happening. We always have
wildfires.
Wildfires, just an outsized impact. You know, Q1 is always a little bit tricky with that stuff, but there was just a confluence of issues with Q1. What concerned me about the Chipotle call was the executives acknowledged all of those headwinds over here, but that wasn't why there was a transaction decline as much as, quote, consumers sitting on the sideline. And that's just something you don't hear from Chipotle. You know, like you mentioned, we haven't seen a negative quarter from them since Q2 2020, which the throes of the pandemic, you know, and they are they're very consistent with traffic gains and so on and so forth. So when Chipotle is sort of flashing a signal that consumers are staying on the sideline, it doesn't bode well for what we will see heading into next week when earnings calls really pick up.
And what was it? We were talking about this on our Slack channel. Frozen pizza sales have surged. Yep. And that is another indicator of impending recession, right?
Apparently.
Apparently. and boxed hair dye, I have learned.
That's
boxed hair dye. Yeah. Goes up when that goes up, it's because the economy is bad. Because
there's flashing signals all over the place, and trying to put these pieces together. All of the major airlines have now just thrown their guidance for the year out the window. You know, there was an article this morning, I believe, in the Wall Street Journal about how higher income consumers are starting to shop at discount stores like Academy Sports and Dollar General. And so forth. And I wrote another story this week about data from big accounting from KPMG that was a little bit of a concern in that who knows when this is going to end. So consumers told KPMG that they're planning on cutting back their restaurant spend by as much as 7% a month this summer. 85% are eating more at home explicitly to save money. They're worried about, you know, the macro economic uncertainty. Uncertainty, by the way, is my submission for word of the year already early in Q2. And I think I would get a lot of support for that. Layoffs in March were the third highest ever recorded. You know, the government just started student loan repayments, which impacts about 5 million Americans. Consumer sentiment, as we've talked about, has fallen off a cliff. And travel, not just with the domestic airlines pulling their guidance, travel internationally is expected. We're expected to lose $90 billion this year from tourism money. So the frozen pizza index might be onto something. And essentially, you know, the last time sales were this high for frozen pizzas was during the Great Recession in 2009, and it indicates more people are eating at home. And I think that's what we're going to start to see a little bit.
Yeah. I mean, we've seen this coming for months and months, right? But you and I started talking about this in January, February. Consumer sentiment was off a cliff. The fires were happening. The sickness was happening. The weather was happening. All of these factors. Now, good thing is that we can get into a period without so much sickness and weather. That's great for the summer. But too late. Everybody has really tightened the belt already. And, you know, the first thing that goes tends to be restaurant spend. So we're going to be talking about this for a long time. And you're right, Alicia, where uncertainty is the word of the year, because RLC, everybody was talking about uncertainty, so much so that it was almost hard to talk with any authority about the economy from stage, as you and I both were doing sessions. Because it's like, who knows what's about to happen? I mean, even since the last time we recorded Extra Serving, President Trump has softened his stance, at least in his words, on tariffs for China. And that, you know, doesn't dictate the whole economy, of course, but it is a major factor in consumer sentiment. It's a major factor for those of you listening who are running your restaurants and purchase product either from China or purchase product from manufacturers who purchase product from China. So uncertainty is the name of the game, and it perhaps could last all year. I mean, a recession could become official this year, and yet still we wouldn't know where we're going, because it's just hard to know how all of these geopolitical factors especially could affect the economy. But the number one thing to know here is consumers are tightening the belts. They are buying the frozen pizza, not the pizza for delivery. And everybody, but when I say everybody, I mean the restaurant brands. Nobody, I think, is safe, no matter what kind of value you provide.
Right. And I think because of that uncertainty, the biggest impact, in addition to the consumer sentiment, will be on just slowed growth. You know, I don't envy anybody in charge of a CapEx project right now.
Nope.
Mm-mm. So Chipotle said, for example, the implied tariff impact right now is about $65,000 to $75,000 per new store. And that includes lumber, you know, equipment, HVAC systems, all of that. And so if Chipotle, you know, that's a big chunk of money, maybe not so much for Chipotle, but, you know, I don't want to be dismissive of $75,000 per store. I think we're going to just at the very least see a very muted growth in the near term, at least in the next couple quarters.
For sure. All right. Speaking of value chains, and I don't know, this may or may not be connected to economic volatility. You tell me, Alicia, but Jack in the Box announced that it is exploring its options with Del Taco. Now, you might remember Jack in the Box acquired Del Taco just 3 years ago, 2022. Okay. And here they are 3 years later saying, you know what, we might sell this brand. Again, here's two value players, Jack in the Box and Del Taco, very much living in that value sandbox. I would argue, I can't speak for you, Alicia, but I would argue when that acquisition happened, we were all like, huh, you know, aside from both of them being Southern California brands, wasn't a lot about that joining at the hip that made a ton of sense. But we thought, hey, two value brands, you know, who knows? At the time, there was a lot of M&A, at least discussion, not as much activity, but there was certainly a lot of discussion around, ooh, everybody's going to gobble up all these brands. And it was almost like Jack in the Box wanted to get in that, and they jumped on it and acquired Del Taco. But here they are saying, you know what, we maybe want to do takesies backsies. Alicia, what do you make of this?
Yes, your point, 2022 was that weird brief renaissance, right? So everybody...
We thought COVID was all done. Woo! And yeah,
pent
here we go.
Demand. And woo! Let's go buy a $575 million Tex-Mex brand.
That's what I do, don't you, Alicia?
So I think that this is not terribly surprising because it has been a little bit of a drag on, you know, Jack in the Box has underperformed, struggled really the last couple quarters. So has Del Taco. CEO Lance Tucker just moved into that position last month with the departure of Darren Harris. Fresh eyes are always, you know, somebody coming in with fresh eyes is going to take a look at this and make immediate changes. So these, you know, these exploration of a strategic alternatives could very well lead to a divestiture. It hasn't yet. I want to really kind of say that their little plan called Jack on Track. I thought that was really cute.
Well, but at least they have that going for them.
Yes. But the whole point here is just simply to focus on the core business, improve the cash flow, pay down debt. You know, I think the bigger story here from where I'm sitting is that they could close up to 200 underperforming locations. Most of those locations have been in the system for about 30 years. We're seeing this across a number of brands. And that, I think, underscores where we are in this environment where, because the environment is so uncertain, you know, we should have turned this into a drinking game every time you say uncertain.
Next episode. Because
the environment is so uncertain, it focusing on the core is more critical than ever. And focusing on four-wall profitability is more critical than ever. We can't just grow for growth's sake anymore. We, you know, and some of these brands are like the ones in Jack in Box system that have been in the system for 30 years. Markets change a lot in that time. Demographics change. So with Jack in the Box, so they're finding success in some of their newer markets, including mine, Louisville. They just debuted in Louisville about a year and a half ago, and there's always a really long line in the one down the street from me. So that's just the name of this game, but it will be interesting to see how much they actually close. 120 are expected to be shuttered by the end of this year. So they're moving with a lot of urgency here. It will be interesting to see what happens with those closures. And also what they decide to do with Del Taco.
Well, you know, it reminds me of, you know, a few months back when Denny's announced that it would be closing some restaurants as well. And I had the opportunity to speak with Kelly Valade, CEO. And, you know, I think perhaps similar with Jack in the Box, the case with Denny's, it's like, look, sometimes when you close restaurants, people see this as warning sign that everything's a failure. But in fact, you really are just kind of taking a step back in order to optimize your step forward. So it's not about, hey, we're retreating from our heights. It's more that there's smarter growth ahead. We're recognizing these are underperforming restaurants. And in order to be the best version of our company, we've got to really close those and push forward. So I think to that point, I would assume that could be the case with Jack in the Box, especially because to your point, Alicia, you know, they're in Louisville. I believe it was Salt Lake City they went into with a much more efficient prototype. And we're seeing all kinds of success with that. And so it's like, you know, they've tapped into something that should be helpful going forward, but you sometimes have to take that one step back to go two steps forward. Now, I just am interested, though, because of these value-oriented brands. One might think, if you look back during the Great Recession, that, you know, the QSRs with value orientation did weather that much better than full-service restaurants, of course, and a lot of others. It really gave rise to fast casual as we know it. I will just be interested to see, because it so far, you know, it's not black and white, of course, but it's just like, the value players, this is not a slam dunk that right now you're going to get through this time unscathed, because there is just so much going on. And compared to the Great Recession, so much more competition, particularly from fast casual, that it's no guarantee that value alone is going to get you out of this.
No question. It's very weird right now. And, you know, we just talked about Chipotle. I never thought we would be there, but, and Chipotle is going to be fine. They're going to get back on track.
Yeah.
And, but you know, when you think of Jack in the Box, their sales were down 4.4%. So they're struggling more than most QSRs in that value segment, that intensifying value environment. And it there's going to be winners and losers, and it's no longer clear based on segment. It's clear based on, you know, their business model, their operational model, and everything that comes with that. So it's just really interesting.
For sure. Okay, let's talk about some executive changes that happened on the same day. This was Wednesday? Was it Wednesday that we had our crazy day that poor Alicia was writing stories at like 6 a.m.?
This was not a crazy day. This was a crazy week. And
this is a crazy week.
I'm knocking on some piece of wood because today has been delightfully quiet.
And there's more week yet to go. You never know. Maybe we get that 5 p.m. Friday news drop.
I'm sure we will.
You're certain of it. Okay, so what happened was, first thing that happened that day was we found out that G.J. Hart, CEO of Red Robin, was stepping down from his position. Later that day, we found out that Charlie Morrison, former CEO of Wingstop and Salad & Go, would be taking on the CEO role at Jersey Mike's. Let's start with the G.J. Hart news. Of course, G.J. Hart has been in this industry a long time. If I'm getting them all correctly, Texas Roadhouse, California Pizza Kitchen, Torchy's Tacos, Red Robin, a respected figure in this industry. What do we make of him stepping down from his position at Red Robin?
You know, reading through tea leaves, Red Robin he put that 5-point plan into place when he came on board as CEO in September of 2022. It was exceptionally comprehensive. I mean, it was everything from staffing up at the hostess stand to blowing up their burgers and redoing the whole thing. He's been on the board at Red Robin since 2019, so he had a really interesting perspective on when he came into that that point in 2022 when the brand urgently needed a turnaround plan. There have been signs of progress there. You know, Red Robin has sequentially improved its same store sales. That said, there's been restless investors. Its share price remains significantly down. And the company recently, end of 2024, announced that it was also going to close about 100 or so underperforming units. So G.J. Hart, I think, is one of the, you know, best minds in the business. I think his plan was stout. I think it was the right plan. I wonder if the closure should have come first before the significant investments in the menu. That's the only thing that seemed that could have maybe changed. I don't get paid to make those decisions, but that, you know, it seemed like progress was coming, but was coming really, really slow. He's staying on board to transition David Pace. So, you know, he's going to continue to advise this company through that transition. And I'm sure this isn't the last we're going to see of G.J. Hart.
Well, it's interesting because when he left Torchy's Tacos, it was technically he was retiring.
Yeah, he came out of retirement for this job.
Yeah, and he had been on the board of Red Robin, I believe, and then took the CEO role. Look, some people just don't know how to retire. I remember my own father just like years and years. He just kept working when he should have retired. But you know, perhaps this could be a retirement. Look, I don't envy any CEO in this climate. Figuring out what's the path forward, taking that responsibility, having to deal with a board. I mean, there is so much pressure to be that figurehead at a company in a climate like this. I do not envy them. And so for those who may be near retirement age, I could see how that would be enormously attractive to just check out.
And in that segment in particular, I mean, just
casual dining. Yeah.
Just as tough as it can be for casual dining.
And there's not a lot of light at the end of the road. The tricky thing for casual dining is you can look at Chili's and Texas Roadhouse and even Cracker Barrel and say, oh, well, they're making it. But you know, a lot of those cases, you got the lightning in a bottle. There's no real great blueprint for how to achieve casual dining success. And so you're right. Casual dining, a pretty brutal industry to be in right now, especially if we have a recession looming for a year or two. Okay, let's get into the Charlie Morrison news because, I mean, to me, all around, slam dunk here. One of the most exciting restaurant brands in America with incredible growth behind them and incredible growth ahead of them. And one of the most successful CEOs of the past decade plus in Charlie Morrison. Charlie Morrison, I think, really put Wingstop on the map as a national brand in his tenure there. Then he went to Salad and Go, which really was an interesting move, I think, in all of our eyes, because it was essentially an emerging brand. And, you know, we saw that what he wanted to do was create a essentially do for Salad and Go what he did for Wingstop, but do it in the obviously the salad fast casual category. Was only there a couple of years. Salad and Go has had some growth. However, I don't know, perhaps, you know, not as much potential there for whatever reason. Charlie Morrison left Salad and Go. He recently took a board position at Nothing Bun Cakes, one of the most interesting brands in America, as far as I'm concerned, because of the product and the fact that it is America's favorite chain, according to our report earlier this year. But now he emerges as CEO of Jersey Mike's. Again, I think a slam dunk, great leader and a great brand, just was acquired by Blackstone last year. I believe $8 billion transaction. Peter Cancro has been leading this brand for 50 years. He's going to remain on the board and a close advisor. I mean, what's not to love about that, Alicia?
Exactly. I think, you know, just even judging by all the comments on all of the posts about this hire, from the Jersey Mike's post to my personal post on LinkedIn and everything else in between who was sharing this news, Charlie Morrison is well-respected and well-liked in this industry, and his track record speaks for itself. There's nothing else to add. He's just one of the most measured and capable leaders that this industry has.
Yeah, perhaps I shouldn't offer this peek behind the curtain so much, but Alicia, us in media, we have our favorites. We know who are the ones who are people we really enjoy talking to and who will give us the time of day and those who will not. Thankfully, way more of the former than the latter. I just personally always found Charlie Morrison to be such a great human being who was always very eager to help us with content. Going back to my, you know, days of my former employer, he's just been a very kind, generous leader. And you just don't get a lot of those. There's a handful of those in this industry, no doubt. But somebody who is just a great leader, a great person, and the proof is in the pudding. And I think that is why it's such a good fit at Jersey Mike. Because by the way, another person who's like that is Peter Cancro. Peter Cancro has always given us the time of day. He will remember your name when you see him, you know, 8 months after you last saw him. Just one of those guys who, you know, is just a good leader. Everybody looks up to and wants to emulate. So again, very exciting days for Jersey Mike's, which has been one of the fastest growing chains by unit count in the last couple of years, opening hundreds of locations per year. I think they're poised for more incredible growth. I personally believe that in 5 to 10 years, they'll be a top 10 chain in America. The sandwich category ripe for the taking, with Subway kind of coming back down to earth as they are. Okay, let's move on to our extra serving of the episode. McDonald's, not to be outdone by all these other brands that are making news. McDonald's made a menu announcement and a rare permanent menu addition with its new McCrispy strips. Is it McCrispy strips? Am I getting that right?
Correct.
Okay. Yep. I keep wanting to call them tenders, but they're McCrispy strips. And here to talk about that is our senior food and beverage editor, Brett Thorne. Brett, welcome to Extra Serving.
Thank you. How you doing?
Well, Brett, we're good. We've had a real roller coaster ride of an episode so far. There's good, there's bad. We're coming off of good. We just talked about Charlie Morrison taking the Jersey Mike's role. Charlie Morrison knows a thing or two about chicken, and we're going to talk about chicken, which is that McDonald's rolled out McCrispy chicken strips to their permanent menu addition, I should add. Brett, why is this a big deal?
Well, it is their first permanent addition since 2021. Is that right, Alicia?
That's correct.
Yep. Story. I just mentioned it in Menu Tracker. It's McDonald's continuing to lean into chicken, which it's been doing for quite a while now. And as Alicia also said, it could be a prelude to the return of their snack wraps, which is kind of a big deal. And you know, it's just super on trend. In general, people are just eating the hell out of chicken. And also quite significantly, McDonald's has introduced a creamy chili dip to go with it, which... Sauces are where so much of the innovation is going on these days. Sauces and beverage is where so much is happening. I mean, sauces are a very easy operational lift. You just say, here's another sauce. And so it makes sense for any kind of menu innovation to be easy these days. Obviously, labor is tight. Everybody's trying to save money. So it's just a smart move on the part of McDonald's, in my opinion.
Very easy way to differentiate in a crowded category. I mean, because that's what I keep thinking as well, which is so many brands are doing chicken. You have the chicken only brands. You have the burger brands doing more chicken than they're doing burgers. It's chicken, chicken, chicken. And, you know, there's only so many ways to fry a chicken. So in order to stand out, the dips are a great way to do that. My question is, will we have any more chickens in the world after we are eating all of them from all of this chicken innovation?
Well, we've gotten really like stupid good at raising chickens. When I started this job a long time ago at the turn of the century, it took about 6-7 weeks to bring a chicken from egg to harvest. That is down to around 4 weeks now. That's amazing. I mean,
wild. We've
dialed in the genetics and even more so the feed balance while cutting back on subtherapeutic antibiotics, which have been strongly discouraged by the FDA. You're not supposed to use them as growth promotants. I can't say whether they are or not, but the FDA has tried to crack down on that. And so we've gotten really, really good at, as I said, at breeding chickens. The problem is that avian flu is getting meaner. So that's why egg prices are so high. And so I can't fully answer your question, Sam.
You did a pretty darn good job of it, though. Thank you, Brett. Well, I don't think there's a real answer because I don't think the world's going to run out of chicken. I think hopefully we figure out how to keep that species because otherwise how would we eat our favorite thing? Alicia, what do you make of McDonald's menu addition in the grand scheme of McDonald's growth strategy?
Well, I saw also, Brett, you might know something about this. I saw a tweet about how because McDonald's is leaning more into chicken, it's driving chicken prices up by like 10% across the board. And I thought that was, you know, that's obviously because they're so big, but it's just something that you think about kind of as an afterthought. This is, you know, like Brett said, they've been focusing on chicken for a while. I believe it was a few years ago when their chicken sales reached parity with their beef sales, which when you tell somebody who's not as entrenched in this industry as we are, that always surprises them, you know, because McDonald's was founded on the burger. But, you know, and it was last month where the company came out and said that they were actually going to create category teams to focus explicitly on chicken. And then they had one for beef and one for snacks and beverages. So they are really zooming in on this in earnest, and they are doing it intentionally because as we saw with the Technomic Top 500 report, the top 500 chicken chains grew by over 15% last year, whereas the entire industry grew by just 3.1%, which was less than pricing. So chicken is going this way and the industry is kind of going a little bit this way. And McDonald's is McDonald's. Of course they want a piece of that. And they they have the advantage of being top of mind just by their footprint alone. So everybody wants chicken, and oh, look, there's a McDonald's. Oh, look, there's another McDonald's. So this this category thing that they're doing where they focus explicitly on these three categories, I think is really going to change the game for them. And then, you know, as Brett mentioned, they've teased at the Snap Wrap return on, they didn't say the month, but on the 14th of some month, it will come back this year. And I think that's just, that's driving a lot of momentum. There was a report this week from BTIG that showed that franchisees are starting to see a lot of the momentum coming back to McDonald's that was lost with that October E. coli outbreak. So interesting. They report next week, so we'll have more.
McDonald's could be the value player that benefits from this rocky climate. Now, I've maybe told you guys this before, but I'm fascinated by the fact that, and Alicia, this will mean something to you, which is Chick-fil-A opened a new location right by my house here in the Polaris area of Columbus. And then a mile down the road is constructing another Chick-fil-A just on the opposite side of the road. And it makes me think of coffee, because you can get away with that with coffee, where it's like, well, one traffic's going this way, one traffic's going that way, everybody going to work this way, get stops at this coffee place, everybody going to work going this way, stops at that coffee place. But chicken, and the reason I bring it up, and especially for a Chick-fil-A, which is doing $7-9 million per restaurant, and they're a mile apart. Now, Alicia, again, this is either side of 71, so that may have something to do with it. But what I want to know is, when do we hit peak chicken? Because when you have, I've got Chick-fil-A's going all over this city, you know, and then Huey Magoo's just opened here. Slim Chickens has targeted Columbus for growth. McDonald's is going to be, you know, just busting chicken out the windows. Like, at what point do customers say, well, I have too many chicken options? Brad, do you think that's possible? Could we run out of chicken opportunity here?
I don't know about specifically chicken, but certainly restaurant opportunity. I mean, traffic is down. The economy appears to be slowing. Even Chipotle had a bad quarter. So, like, if you open another restaurant, I think chances are good you're going to cannibalize another restaurant. But will Chick-fil-A suffer from opening one a mile down the road? I doubt it. I mean, they're very good at researching that stuff. They probably know. But immediately when you said that, my thought was, oh, the Starbucks strategy. And you mentioned coffee. It's the same thing. And I don't know what this highway is you're referring to, but it's hard to cross the street when you're
driving. The one that takes me from here to Alicia.
Yay!
North-South highway. So it's hard to cross that street. And you're not going, you're hungry. You're driving. You're not going to stop your trip and turn around to even for a chicken sandwich that you love. So I think it makes sense to do that. But I mean, I think during every sort of economic slowdown, we reach peak restaurant and a lot of them will close, which is what a lot of them are doing.
Yeah, I think that's right. And Alicia and I were talking about this earlier in the episode, which is just the economic volatility and it having very much an effect on all restaurants. But unfortunately, could hit especially independents and emerging brands the most, just like COVID did, because at a certain point when people are not going out to restaurants, the ones who suffer are the ones who just don't have the resources to stay open. And so with so much competition in trying to get consumers' attention, unfortunately, it's just going to cost perhaps a number of businesses. Alicia, I want to circle back to around McDonald's just a couple weeks ago announced this sort of reorg. And I mean, we knew from then that chicken was going to be huge because chicken was one of these sort of go to market. They want to go to market with ideas faster, specifically with chicken and with beverage. And this seems sort of like the first volley in that, perhaps. And I mean, do we think beverage will start to see something coming around the pike on beverage too?
Yeah. I mean, I think there's a reason they're tinkering with this little Cosmic's concept. I don't think Cosmic's is going to become a viable chain on its own. I think they're testing, they're using those, what, not even a dozen Cosmic's locations, most of them in Texas, to figure out what specialty beverages customers want and how to operationalize them in McDonald's. And I think that probably will start to see that maybe next year. But I think this category creation is going to be a big step toward that as well. And it all comes down to what their CEO, Chris Kempczinski, said. And we have this Technomic data in front of us, you know, this huge meteoric growth of specialized concepts, whether it's the Dutch Bros and Seven Brew in beverages, you know, or the all the chicken players like Raising Cane's that focus just on chicken. McDonald's, again, has that advantage of footprint where they can take that traffic away from and maybe sort of put a stop to that huge growth that all these specialized concepts are showing right now. There's no question that these really fast growing concepts are taking share away from the big players. We've seen that with Starbucks, you know, Dutch Bros, Seven Brew, Scooters. All of those concepts are gaining a little bit of share where Starbucks has lost share. They've got a long way to go to catch up, but they want to, these big players are savvy. They want to protect themselves, insulate from any of that potential lost traffic with this huge growth of specialized concepts.
Well, there are other specialized beverage concepts besides coffee also. But Swig immediately comes to mind, and it's fizz drinks and the other ones. And the big players are doing things about that. Burger King just provided the option of adding Nerds candies to your frozen strawberry drink if you want to do that. And if you look at this week's menu tracker, there are a gajillion new beverages out there. Shakes and soft drinks and boba and all sorts of stuff. And, you know, it makes sense because a beverage is an incremental sale. People, it might be a different occasion, or they're not going to say, I don't really want fries today. I think I'm going to have a drink. You add the drink to it. And so it makes sense to innovate in that area. And adding Nerds on top is great for the social media because people love to see that stuff.
And certainly the core demographic of Okus children would certainly go for that. The Nerds in the beverage, they would be all over that.
And chicken strips, if I remember correctly.
Chicken strips. Oh, yeah. Chicken, fried chicken, macaroni and cheese. I mean, you cannot go wrong with this household. So we're here for it. We're here for the chicken renaissance and the beverage renaissance alike. All right. That's all the time we have for today. Brett Thorne, Alicia Kelso, as always, thank you for joining me.
Our industry is grappling with uncertainty. At the 2025 National Restaurant Association show, you'll explore innovative solutions, strategies, and partnerships that will prepare you for whatever comes your way. Take it from me. The show has everything you need to elevate your front and back of house. You'll see, touch, taste, and demo the latest trending products across more than 900 categories, including food, beverage, technology, equipment, and more. Don't miss the industry's most trusted event taking place in Chicago, May 17th to 20th. Secure your badge by May 9th to save $30. Register today at nationalrestaurantshow.com. Rate quoted ends on May 9th and applies to operators only. Non-exhibiting suppliers are subject to a higher badge rate. Please check out the show's website.